Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, the executive editor for SearchCIOMidMarket.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast series on user strategies for cutting costs in a virtualized data center. Joining us today are two IT executives who have cut costs with virtualized data centers. First is Andrew Baker, who is the VP of IT operations at ARGI, a New Jersey-based company that provides managed hosting services. Also joining us is Stephen Summer, former CIO for 25 years at Hughes, Hubbard & Reed, a New York-based law firm. Stephen is now the principal of SLS Consulting, which he founded. Also joining us today is Laura DiDio, a high-tech industry analyst and consultant, a professional writer and former reporter. Laura is now the principal at Information Technology Intelligence Corporation. Today, we're discussing some real-life cost-cutting strategies that these IT executives are using in their virtualized data centers. So first, we're going to talk about virtualization and cost-cutting and what exactly you're doing with your disaster recovery and readiness strategies.
Andrew Baker and Stephen Summer are eminently qualified to discuss this. These folks were literally steps away from ground zero on the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, and both of them had to really swing into action to get their organizations back up and running. And since that time, of course, virtualization in the last 2 or 3 years has really taken hold. But after 9/11, both of you have told me in many conversations that we've had that your organizations got religion when it came to disaster recovery, backup, and now virtualization. So, Steve, let's start with you first. Mm-hmm. What changed and what are your best strategies for optimizing the environment and cutting your cost with virtualization, disaster recovery, and backup?
Well, Laura, it used to be that, there was used to be a one-to-one relationship with a server-based disaster recovery and business continuity. And now what we can do is essentially by using virtualization technology, we can encapsulate the operating system, an application, and its data into the equivalent of an application running on top of an operating system. And that operating system, I hope I don't sound too, verbose, but the idea here is that, we can, in effect, run with proper management capacity and management tools and, analyzing the data, analyzing the application itself, run, let's say, 4 or 5 applications on one machine instead of using the 5 previously. So what happens is you can go ahead and your disaster recovery, you save on space, you save on servers, you save on management, and you can effectively back up your applications to a disaster recovery site, and also, which we couldn't do before, is test on the machine, actually test a disaster recovery without upsetting the production environment itself. So some of those are the major gains. It used to cost between $43,000 for major production systems to $15,000 to second-tier systems, and now, you can virtually cut that in half or less by using a 5-to-1 approach or 4-to-1 approach or whatever, as long as you can fit the operating system to it. And the only problems you have with that is of course, you're not going to save on there's memory cost involved, there's storage cost involved still, and so on. But as long as you can fit the application by working with the vendors, by knowing what the application requires, you can actually fit, a number of applications on one server and save space and store it and back it up and have disaster recovery and business continuity at the same time. So these are very, very important because before that, we'd have to bring things down to test. And management wouldn't buy into that at all, especially if you're a 7x24 operation and you have to be constantly up and running all the time. And what really woke us up, as you said, Laura, was the fact that after 2001, the idea of cost containment was thrown out the window when it comes down to getting disaster recovery started, and it became an expensive proposition. And if I had to do it again over again right now, people saying, you spend $1 million on disaster recovery, we can't afford that right now, being a mid-market CIO or consultancy trying to support that. I don't know if you agree, but I think that now, you can sell the proposition as long as you can sell the cost containment at the same time and the ability to go ahead and test and back up to a separate site or even to one of your own sites, a branch site or so on, it's become more effective using virtualization.
Okay, Andrew, from your perspective, what do you think is the correct mix of, say, hot, warm, and cold backups? And do you check that against your licensing agreements to make sure that you're saving money there? Because some of them, if you have Microsoft in your shop and you have an EA agreement or you buy software assurance, the maintenance and upgrade plan, they will include the price of a cold backup. It differs from vendor to vendor.
Right,
I'm sure
right.
Oracle and all those have it. But, you know, what do you find? What's your strategy here? What tips can you pass on?
It really does depend on the difference. It really does depend on what licensing you have, what types of applications, because some applications are complex if you're dealing with an ERM system or you're dealing with higher-end applications, you're going to have to deal with three or four vendors licensing, right? Whatever the database is, whatever the OS is, and any other components that are in there. So there's no set rule, hard and fast, on which way do you go. Do you go with warm? Do you go with cold? It also depends on how much money is going to be lost.
Right.
A cold backup, restoring a cold environment takes longer. Restoring hot requires that both systems are active. You almost always have to pay double the licenses. Sometimes a vendor will let you do half on the one that's not active. So those are all considerations that you need to work with. And a hot environment is usually more complicated than a cold or warm environment. So you have to factor in how much more experienced am I going to need my folks to be to manage a clustered environment versus one that is swap the data, bring up the second box in an emergency kind of environment. So those are considerations. Now, where virtualization really helps in those is that in the past, it was very hard to get things tested and running, and you had to work with the same hardware. So that meant refreshing the DR environment periodically. Now that everything is virtualized, once you've built a virtual box on X hardware, you don't really care what brand of hardware you're bringing that up for the most part. So you don't have those kinds of considerations, and you can take advantage of improvements on the back-end hardware as time passes without having to go through a whole lot of expense as you would have in the past.
And
okay.
Laura, if I can enrich what Andrew said, is that, and I've said this before, there is no excuse and no, you know, you can't leave out the fact of training. You know, you can't be dependent on an outside consultancy to come in and help you all the time to get things. You can get things set up, but you need to be able to train people. And as Andrew said, you have to have the expertise level to get virtualization done and to support virtualization.
You definitely have to. That was one of the considerations that we had bringing in virtualization. It's not the same ball game. The environment, you know, a lot of times folks are happy about consolidation, about the improvements in space and heat, but there is a problem. There's complexity. Whereas before, if you had 10 servers in your environment before, the odds of one of them breaking is 10%. Right, flat odds. When you have a consolidated environment where you have maybe two hosts with all of your clients running in those hosts, and you're connected to virtualized storage, and you've got all this virtual networking, well, almost every problem is going to hit more than one box, just by the nature of things. So it has to be a more robust environment. You can't afford to have any cheap servers in that mix. You have to have people that know what they're doing and are kind of cross-trained to the extent that storage, networking, and OS are all integrated in the mix there. So it's a trade of cost. It gives you a lot of flexibility. But when things go wrong, it requires a lot more knowledge.
Yeah, and consider this also. I mean, my thing was, when it comes to virtualization or Citrix or any other application in remote access, you have to build a SWAT team of people. And these people have to be the ones you turn to go ahead and support that. So with virtualization, you gain the ability to shrink or condense or consolidate. And you also have to look at the application, and you have to have knowledge of the application and production environment if you're going to do a production virtualization. Now, let me give you an example. If you have Exchange, you have to know how to bring Exchange up. You don't just go ahead and virtualize Exchange and say, okay, something happened, let's bring up Exchange. You also have to bring up your domain controllers first. Mm-hmm. You have to bring up things before that, before you can bring up Exchange. So there's a lot more involved on the intelligentsia end to go ahead and run this stuff than it was to have a one-to-one relationship with servers. And, you know, go ahead and bring up your domain controllers, bring up Exchange, bring up your Exchange branch servers, and so on. You have to know the exact order and how to do the and how they run in a virtualized environment. So you have to work with Microsoft. You have to work with your consultancy. You have to get this down pat in order to automate the process properly.
Okay, very quickly, Andrew, what is your best technical tip or business tip for saving money when you're combining, you know, virtualizing your disaster recovery environment?
The best tip for saving money when virtualizing a disaster recovery environment is to make sure that you understand how the application is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with an abstracted environment. You can't take it. You can't treat it as a flat network where hundreds of servers will be sitting, even though they may be sitting on two or three physical hosts. You have to develop an architecture. You need people who have an architectural understanding. Otherwise, assumptions will be made that are invalid and will cause contention at the I/O level, at the storage level, at the networking level for your environment, and it'll be worse than it would have been had you done it the more conventional way.
How about you, Steve?
Okay, I like your
SWAT team approach.
Yeah. I go along with Andrew on a couple of things. Of course, the training aspect is very important, okay? But the biggest thing, always test the configuration. Do not let, if you're going to sell your management on virtualization and disaster recovery and the continuity, don't be a fool and allow them to say, okay, great, you set it up, and then when it happens, then you should be able to switch it over. That's a definite road to path for a CIO to ruin. Okay, because and you're allowed yourself with virtualization to test. You should be able to go ahead and test all the dependencies, test the configuration, bringing it down and up at your leisure, okay, and or also have a full configuration test overall for the firm or company and say, this is the day we're going to do it. It may be September, Labor Day, like it was. You know, I know, Andrew, I work on holidays, so.
Yeah, we just
Labor
did a migration in,
yeah.
in you Memorial
know,
Day.
It has to be that's my biggest tip. It has to be tested, and you're no good unless you test.
Okay,
no
real quick. Andrew, what percentage do you think your company has saved by virtualization and disaster recovery?
Saved. Our company has probably saved about 40% of the budget, and the reason why it's that number is because there was so much we needed to do and get, and we wouldn't have been able to do it without virtualization.
Okay. Steve, what about you when you were at Hughes, Hubbard & Reed? How much did they
save? Well, we didn't save 80% on a 5-to-1 basis, but we probably saved between 40-60% on various production systems. Okay.
Wow, that's
we'll
really that's significant for both of you.
Is
that? Do you think that's the average?
If it's done right, like Andrew and I did, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you have to understand what the value is. It allows you to bring up to turn up resources much more quickly than before. There's you don't have to provision as exactly at a moment's notice. Somebody says, I need a server that does this, and they give you specs, and you build to that, and you find out it's wrong. You can rebuild to that very quickly, as opposed to if you had purchased those boxes and now need to figure out how to repurpose them. So there are a lot of savings that are there, things that you can afford to do that you can't when it's only physical devices you're dealing with.
Yeah, your first uptick is, you know, and again, I know Andrew agrees with me, because we're doing, you know, we suffer the same thing. It's just, you got to train first. You got to get the personnel in first. Either you hire the personnel or you train the personnel. Your upfront costs are a little bit larger than normal, okay? But
right.
Once you do that, everything starts to slide down. It's a slide-down kind of thing. As long as you can maintain it and as long as you know what you're doing, you know, your costs become less and less over time in supporting a disaster recovery site and or sites. Because it's humongous. Don't forget, it's it's 10 times the cost. If I was going to build a data center, and then let's say I started at $30,000, it's going to 10, 20 years, 15 years ago, it's going to probably cost me $200,000 to do the same data center I did 10 years ago. So all this is, you know, looking at shrinking, consolidating, and using the same space we had, but also going off-site. We lose $100,000 to $1 million a day. It depends. We can lose $1 million a day if we're down.
Right.
Talking great, for you, Robert.
Great information. Well, thank you both.
And on that note, that concludes today's podcast series. Thank you again to our speakers, and thank you all for listening. Have a great day.